Hey, 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 Luminous Warriors, it is Natalie Griffin coming to you live from the Naughty Shaman Studio, which this evening is my couch. And I'm so happy to talk with you every week. I'm so grateful for all of you. We have 2,000 listeners now. I'm so grateful for all of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you ever want to catch us live, we have some workshops coming up this fall. We're even better live. We're so much fun. So you can join us for Courageous Creator in October. Or if you're feeling adventurous, we're going to Peru in 2019 and we'd love to have you. Check it out on the website, naughtyshaman.com. All right, here's the deal. Tonight, I'm talking about one of my favorite topics, and I'm going to tell you an embarrassing story about my life, which was such a rich experience. I can't wait to share it. But tonight we're talking about failure. We're talking about the big, whopping, messy, horrible failures that we've all had in our lives. And what the heck do you do after that? So that is what we're going to be talking about tonight. And so to start this evening, I want to tell this story. But I have to begin at the beginning. So I'm going all the way back to the beautiful Kent, Ohio. Kent, Ohio is this beautiful tiny town, just south of Cleveland, about an hour and a half, 2 hours north of Columbus in Ohio. And this town is super, super cool and most famous for Kent State University, where there were shootings in the 70s, which isn't a great thing to be famous for, but it's a beautiful school, great fashion industry, and it's filled with hippies. This is why I loved growing up there. There were coffee shops and beatniks and people smoking cigarettes and reading poetry, and it was heaven to me to grow up in this small town. And I love that. So I went to high school in Kent at Kent Roosevelt High School. Woo woo. And when I was in Kent, you know, I was always kind of a type A personality. I liked to win. I liked to be the leader. I liked to be involved. And so for most of my high school career, I, you know, was the president of everything they would let me be the president of, and started the girls' soccer team with some friends because we wanted to play soccer and there wasn't one. And we thought, well, of course we have to start one because what else are you going to do if you want to play soccer? It never occurred to us to just give in. So I had a great group of friends and I enjoyed my high school time there until about, I think, my junior year when tragedy struck. I fell in love with a boy. I'm going to save this story for another day because it's a juicy one. But long story short, I fell in love with a boy and he ended up dying in a car accident quite tragically. And it broke my heart. And at the time, I was so young and I really had a difficult time trying to process this immense amount of grief and this person that I had become, this mask that I wore all the time in high school. And so when he died, I kind of split into two people. And, you know, I went back to school and was still the president of the student council and still president of this, that, and the other thing. And smiling and wearing my cheerleading uniform and, you know, helping, you know, old people cross the street and whatever else I was doing. But then behind the scenes, I was really sad. And it was really hard for me to figure out a reason to get out of bed. And I sort of had this dark side, this secret life that started to take form at the time. And it was fueled by a deep grief and depression. And probably the only thing keeping me together at that point was my role in student government. And I had great mentors and people supporting me through that. And they kept encouraging me to be the best version of myself. And when high school ended, you know, I was one of those kids that everyone thought was going to go to a great school because I was so involved and so happy and so smiley all the time. And I didn't even fill out a single college application. I was so depressed behind closed doors that I pretty much believed that I probably wasn't going to live past 25. I just sort of knew that I was going to fade out just like this guy. And so what was the point of even trying? And so my big plan at the time was to kind of get through high school so I could drop the mask and just be depressed and quit life. And that was my big plan at the time. And I had a friend who said, you know, don't do that. At least fill in that college application to Kent State University. And I was like, can't read, can't write, Kent State? You want me to go to that? And that was the big joke in town, you know, because if you went local, that was just the worst thing you could do. You had to go away to go to school. So I filled out very begrudgingly a college application to can't read, can't write, Kent State, to KSU, Kent State University. And to my dismay, I ended up getting in. You know, I had good grades, and so of course I got in. And I decided to live on campus, and that was the freedom that I needed to really indulge in this twisty, weird, depressed Natalie that was trying to figure out how to grieve a great loss and the terrible fear of facing a future, really without any experience. And so I did my best. You know, I had freshman orientation. I learned all about, you know, where my classes were. And I read the papers and I got the tour. And I learned about how we all had these guidance counselors. And there were people that could help you with tutoring. And then there was this program called Freshman Forgiveness. So if you did struggle in a class and got a bad grade, that you could retake the class and get a better grade under certain circumstances. And, you know, it all sounded hunky-dory. And I was going to be an English major and a beatnik poet, just like everybody else in Kent State. That was my big dream there, is to be a beatnik poet. And so it's about 2 weeks before Christmas. I've been in college now for just one semester. And I get a letter in the mail from Kent State University. And Christmas is a big deal in my house when I was growing up. And my mom was already down in Houston with my brother and his family getting everything ready. My dad stayed behind because he had to work and I had to finish school. And we were going to meet up with them. So me and my dad are hanging out alone at the house right before Christmas. And I get this letter from Kent State. And I open the letter. And in it says, "Dear Natalie, thank you for attending Kent State University. You are failing out of college with a 0.29 grade point average. Please never come back. We're going to mail your things to the address below. Thank you. Payment is due. XYZ. Goodbye." I was devastated. My hands were shaking. And for the first time, I kind of looked over my shoulder. My dad was sitting on the couch. He didn't know my world had just fallen apart when I opened this letter. He's just reading the paper like a normal day. And I'm shaking because it finally hit me that my brother and I were the first generation of kids in this family to go to college, you know, my dad's family. Unbelievable that I would wreck it so badly and that he's the only one here. Usually my mom would be like, "Oh, let's have some cake and coffee and talk over it. It's okay. It's okay." And she would hug me no matter what, you know, no matter what. She was that kind of mom. It was great. But she was gone. And this is my dad. This is my father who is here to deal with this situation. I'm not even sure if this guy graduated from high school. I think he must have. But he worked his way through life hard. He joined the army. He got disciplined. He started climbing trees and then worked his way up in Davy Tree to become a vice president of sales. He did it all on his own. Taught himself how to sail from a book. Taught himself how to build ships in a bottle from a book. Taught himself everything from a book. This is a guy who got a bodybuilding championship in his 60s, because he started lifting weight in his 50s. He was my hero, and he was the strongest man I knew. And I had to tell him I'd failed out of can't read, can't write, Kent State. And I was shaken. And I don't know if he sensed a disturbance in the force or what, but he looked at me over the paper and said, "Nat, you okay?" And I walked over with shaking hands, and I couldn't even speak. I just handed him the letter, and I thought, oh my God, he's going to murder me. This is it. This is what I foretold. I'm definitely not going to live to 25 because my dad's going to kill me in my basement right now. And he read the letter twice and set it down, looked out the window, and he said, "Let's go to dinner." And I almost wet my pants. I couldn't even believe it. So I was like, oh my gosh. I'm in the car and I'm thinking, I'm free. Like, he totally gets it. I'm set. We're going out to dinner. He's going to hug me just like mom. We're going to eat cake. It's going to be fine. It's going to be totally fine. So we're at dinner and he is just listening. I am going on a rant and a rave because now I think he believes me. He totally has forgiven me already because he hasn't said anything yet. So I am going on a rant about how they did this to me. How did they do this? No one even checked on me when I didn't go to class. Can you believe it? Someone should have checked on me. These teachers are so lazy, Dad. It's their fault. No one cared about me. No one even cared that I didn't understand the lessons before. No one cared that I was overwhelmed. It was ridiculous, Dad. You know, they weren't even inspiring teachers. Most of them just stand up there going, wah, wah, wah. How am I supposed to learn in this kind of environment? There were 100 people in my class, Dad. How would I ever learn? There's no way anyone could pass those classes. It's ridiculous. They expect too much. There's no way anyone could make it. And they talked about this freshman forgiveness. Well, they did not forgive me. They just kicked me out after one semester. We should get a lawyer and we should sue them because it's their fault. And then I had the brilliant idea and I said to him, and you know what I'm going to do? I think I'm going to apply to some new colleges who will definitely appreciate me and find value in me. And I'm going to change my name and I'm going to lie about who I am. And I'm going to get into those schools. I'm going to prove it to Kent State University that it's their loss. And I look at my dad like, yeah, winning. And he set down his fork and he leaned across the table real slow. And he looked at me with these ocean blue eyes. And he pointed a finger at me. I'll never forget. He pointed a finger at me. And he said, Natalie, you never lie about who you are. The mark of a successful person is not how many times they have failed, but what they choose to do after, how they pick themselves up. Now you failed, and you did that all on your own. And you have to accept that. You have to own it. But what you choose to do right now in this moment is likely going to define your future. So you tell me, do you want to be successful? Do you want to grow? Or do you want to sit here and complain all night about something that was your doing? Damn, he had a mastery with words. Although he probably spoke about 50 words to me my entire life, that 25 count for a lot. And I started to cry. And I thought about what was going on. And I felt so bad. And I just apologized to him. And I said, Dad, it is my fault. And I blew it. And I'm so ashamed. I have no idea what to do right now. I don't know what to do. And he said, Nat, no one ever knows what to do. We all just look like we know what to do. But the person who takes responsibility for their actions and their future is going to win every time. And you have to choose right now what kind of person you're going to be. You're going to be player one, or are you going to be player two? And I was like, what's player one? What's player two? So here's the Don Shope philosophy of winning at life. And I am telling you this, not because maybe you're going to college and you just failed out or anything like that. This might not be your story, but where it applies to me is that anyone who is following a calling, anyone who has a dream, anyone who wants to make something creative real, anyone who is a leader, anyone who is a trailblazer, a lover, they're going to fail. You're going to fail. You already have failed. I know it 100 times, probably, like me. We fail. It is what we do. It is the natural process of learning. When you watch a child learn to walk, they fail 523 times before they get it right, before they finally feel confident in the walking. There's failure upon failure upon failure ahead of us in our lives right now. And the problem is that most of us are like I was back then. We don't play the game to win. We play it not to lose. And those are the two players in Don Shope's mind. Player one, they're all in. They're playing to win this game of life. They want their chips all in. They don't want to hedge bets. They want to do the research. They want to find the way. They want to solve the problem. They want to get out there and leave it all on the field. They want to say what needs to be said, tell the truth, be who they really are, and find a way by taking responsibility for their lives and what they create. And that is player one. Player two is the player that doesn't want to lose. So afraid of failure, so afraid of pain, of heartache, of looking foolish, of making a mistake, that they're not living. This is player two. So So to me, this is the Natalie Griffin now philosophy of life, is that the most important question we can ask ourselves, and I ask myself this every day, I ask myself, am I committed to growth? Am I committed to growing? Yes or no? Am I all in or not? Am I all in on playing to win? Am I willing to take risks, look foolish, try, and possibly fail, actually likely fail in many circumstances until I knock it out of the park? Am I willing to put up with that process because I believe in me? And I do. And it took a long time to get there. And I was grateful that I had somebody like my dad in my corner and so many people like my brother, my family, my soul family. There are so many people that helped me believe in me because they reflect that back. And I'm so grateful for that. So that is one of the most important questions you can ask yourself. Are you here to grow? Or do you want to check out, plateau, take it easy? Or do you want to experience life in high def? Do you want to go out of this life in a blaze of glory? Because I like the idea for me to go out at the end of my days, having left everything on the field. Everyone knew how much I loved them, who I loved. Everyone knew what my dreams were. Everyone saw me trying to make those dreams real. I want to leave that legacy. I want that to be my legacy. I want a blaze to occur, you know? And it doesn't happen without all these other blazes that turn your life to ash from time to time. If you want to go out in a blaze of glory, then you got to get comfortable in the fire. If you want to live this life in a blaze of glory, then you do have to get comfortable with fire. And sometimes that little fire will burn your life down. There will be divorce. There will be death. There will be loss. There will be pain. There will be grief. There will be heartache. I wish I had better news, but that is a part of it. And the good thing about that is these heartbreaks, these difficult times build a softness in us. And when we're soft, then we can receive things like joy. We can receive things like love. We can receive things like wonder and amazement and gratitude. We can experience these different emotions because life has softened us. So we have to let these failures create some kind of soft fertility in us so that we can experience everything that life has to offer, including the best of what is here on this planet. And there are so many beautiful things. So I always think of a phoenix when I'm talking about failure, because in that moment of Kent State University, you know, my life turned to ash. All my dreams went down the wash. Everything I thought was supposed to be was good, no longer, and everything just turned to ash. But I learned something that day. And believe it or not, I know this will come as a shock, I've had so many failures since then. And I wrote a poem, actually, that I'm going to share with you, and I'm so nervous about it because I mostly write poem for myself and for the Dharma students who are, you know, captive audience, so they're stuck with me in Dharma school. So sometimes I'll read my poetry. But this poem happened in the middle of a burning to ash moment in my life. My life was swirling around me and things were failing, and I was really wanting it not to fail. I really wanted to play player two, but I remembered I was player one. And this poem is called The Calling. Beloved one, I dreamt of you last night. And we sat laughing round a table with strangers, and you lit a match and leaned across the table and set my heart on fire. I grabbed at my chest and I looked at you in horrible disbelief, and I ran away seeking to quell the searing heat that would surely consume my life. And the fire devoured me. It devoured my hips, my shoulders. It melted my breasts and thighs. And still I ran, I ran, I ran, and the fire claimed my legs and my throat so that I could no longer run or cry out. And lying there alone in the grass, fire roared behind my eyes and through my veins. And with shaking, charred hands, I clung to the few remaining pieces of familiar flesh. And you came to me then, an angel, with a chance to go back around the table as if nothing ever happened. But I couldn't. I had grown so tired of laughing around the table with strangers. And I said to you, let it burn. Take it all. And I surrendered to the hungry flames. And it was over. I got up then. And I stood on the ashes of everything that I had been. And I stepped into the world ablaze. And that is my little poem called The Calling. Let the failures come, let it burn, and then stand up and step into the world ablaze. Peace to you, luminous warriors. Go make some stuff happen out there. The world needs it now, more than ever. All right. Thanks for joining me tonight and for listening to these stories and these poems. I appreciate it very much. So, leaving you now from Naughty Shaman, where we like to keep the sacred a little wild and totally real.